This is a Pinball News production.
How y'all doing? Sorry about the wait. A little technical difficulties getting the camera rig set up, so we might not be able to project the machine, but when we get to that part of the talk, well, there's not a ton of people. Maybe we can just crowd around the machine or something and get a close-in look. So my name is Jerry Stellenberg with Multimorphic. If you haven't heard of me or the company before, we are a company that's trying to bring new technology to pinball. We started about 5 years ago. We developed what's called the P-Rock board. It's a board that hobbyists and consumers can buy, stick it in their existing machine, like their WPC or their Stern machine, and program new rules for it. So we have customers that have taken existing machines. Cactus Canyon's a big example, where someone took our board, rewrote some of the existing rules for Cactus Canyon, extended the rules, made it a much more exciting, a more polished game, and now other people are able to enjoy that too. Most of our software, our software frameworks, our low-level drivers are open source. People can download them, look at the code, understand what we're doing, and do their own thing. And sorry, I know the first 5 or 10 minutes of my talk is very low-level and technical. It's kind of boring, but usually I come to these seminars and I present slides and I show our products and I tell about our grand vision of bringing new technology to pinball and revolutionizing consumer-based pinball. And I talk about the machine and I say, this is what it's going to be someday. When it grows up, it's going to be really cool. Well, it's here, and I think it is really cool, and we'll demo it for you in a minute. But so in addition to our P-Rock board, we have driver boards, we have switch boards, we have all these little modular boards that we design so people who are interested in building pinball machines, whether they're hobbyists or corporations, big companies that want to build pinball machines, they don't have to reinvent the control system. 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago before we started, you couldn't go off the shelf and buy a control system for a pinball machine. If you wanted to build a machine, you had to do your own electronics. And some people did, and they built custom, you know, transistor driver circuits, and they did everything themselves, got an Arduino or a microcontroller to drive it. But there are only a few people in the world that really want to do all those low-level details. So we developed this board system. People can buy it. We have companies that are building machines now, corporations. Skit B is a big example with the Predator machine. They're using our board set. And it's something that they wouldn't want to do. They wouldn't want to build the electronics. That's something we're good at, not something they're good at. They're good at designing machines and making a game fun and playable. So we do the low-level stuff. They do the fun stuff. And the end result is a machine that hopefully consumers can enjoy. Pretty much every company that started up in the last 10 years has talked to us about control systems. I say that we're kind of the company that made it possible for this resurgence to happen, because before Jersey Jack started, I think they were the first in this new wave of companies to start. You couldn't really build a machine. You had to re-engineer everything in the control system to do it. So we build these boards, companies starting up, they're building machines, but my problem with the machines everybody else is building, as I insult the entire industry besides ourselves, is that everyone else in the industry is building what I call a traditional style machine. Think of the most popular or the most recently announced machines, and I can think of 4 or 5 right off the top of my head. Every single one of them that was recently announced or is about to be sold is either a 20-year-old theme, a machine that's being rebuilt, or it's a new machine that's being built with 20-year-old technology based on a theme from 20, 30, 40, 70 years ago. There is no new technology in pinball. No other company is putting new technology. The technology they're putting in are, what, RGB LEDs? So they can change the colors on the playfield a little bit. And some companies are starting to put in LCDs on their machines. So, you know, big graphical displays instead of dot matrix displays. And they're putting it up in the back box like they've traditionally been, where the audience, people walking through an arcade, can see what's going on in the display and they can watch what's going on. They can't really see the playfield. But the player who's playing the machine and staring down at the flippers, he's not watching what's going on the display. So it's not really an ideal place for the display anyway. But that's what they're doing. They're taking displays, they're taking RGB LEDs, and that's new technology. That isn't going to compete with consumer electronic devices. Kids these days are playing with their parents' phones or iPads, or they're playing video games at home. They're playing high-tech games. Consumer electronics at the home is a high-tech thing. And if pinball machines are going to be successful in consumers' houses, they have to compete with other consumer devices. The other obvious problems with traditional pinball machines are they're big. Clearly, our machine's big, too. They take up a lot of floor space, and they're expensive. So figure, for a new in-box machine, talk to any of the companies. They're selling their machines anywhere from $5,000 up to $10,000 or even $13,000 for some of the machines. So every time you want a new machine in your home, if you want a new in-box machine, you're paying $5,000 to $13,000. You're finding a spot for it. You're filling up your house with it. And it just doesn't scale in the consumer market. It's great for arcades. It's great for location-based. It's not good for consumers. And the pinball market is transitioning to consumers. It's growing year over year to consumers. But the problem is that can't be sustained unless we address the issues. So that's what we've done. This is the P3 machine. You may have seen it online or videos that we put out recently. The idea of the P3 is it's a multi-game pinball platform. We're pinball people. We like physical pinball. We like the ball bouncing around, hitting targets, hitting physical things. We like real flippers and bumpers and ramps and loops and targets and magnets and all those things. But we've engineered it in such a way that we can change it. We can literally pull out part of this machine, switch it up, put a whole new shot layout in. So we're trying to address the floor space problem. If you buy a machine, you put one in your house or wherever you want to put it. It takes up one spot in your game room or living room or bedroom. Where do people put pinball machines now? Trey, you have one in your bathroom, right? He's remodeling his bathroom to fit a pinball machine in there. No, I'm just kidding. I made that up. But so there's the floor space problem and there's the price per game problem. $5,000 to $13,000, you're buying the cabinet again. You're buying the flippers again. You're buying the legs again. You're buying the back box again. Why? You're only really playing one of those games at a time anyway. So let's take one cabinet, let's change up the game. Let's let people buy add-on games for, what, $1,000, $2,000, not $5,000 or $10,000 or $13,000. Let's just change it up and see if we can change this consumer paradigm of buying pinball machines. So with that in mind, I want to demo some of the physical stuff first, just so you can kind of see what it is we're talking about when we say we can change this up. When we talk about multi-game stuff, the thing people see from the outside, I'm going to get Les here to help me in a minute, but the first thing people see, and what a lot of people really love about their pinball machines is the artwork. They want their artwork to look like something they enjoy looking at. They want people to come over and see cool stuff on their pinball machines. So a multi-game machine doesn't really make a whole lot of sense if it always looks the same way, unless we come out with some kind of generic, boring multi-game pinball machine white decal that's got some pattern on it that's boring. So, but we want game-specific themed artwork. So the first thing we designed was magnetic artwork. So we can literally just pull off the decal, grab a whole nother decal set and stick it on. And what's great about this is we can change what the game looks like. If we sell a new game or if someone else sells a new game for the platform, you buy it, it comes with decals, and you slap them on there, and now it looks like your new machine. The other thing is maintenance and serviceability. So one of the biggest problems with traditional machines for people who restore them, put them in their houses, is working on the cabinet. To change a decal on a traditional style pinball machine, which is either screened onto the wood or it's a stick-on decal that doesn't really come off. It's a week or two-week process in the garage after work every day to heat it up, to scrape it off, to sand it down, to bondo the cabinet, to do all that. To stick on a new decal, there are two methods a lot of people use. They call them the wet method and the dry method, and you stick them on there, and half the time you get bubbles in there you got to work out, and if you can't get the bubbles out, then you have ugly bubbles on your decals for the rest of its life until you want to pull it into the garage and do it all again. But so magnetic decals literally cost, if you go to your local print shop, $100, $150 to get an entire set of decals printed for your machine. And what that means is, yeah, it's easy to replace. If they scratch, fade, If something happens to them, you just pull them off, go get new ones. But the other cool thing is you can customize your machine for your home. Steven's Arcade. Stick it on there on the side of your cabinet. Just whatever you want it to say, you can make it say it. If you have another idea for a game or for a different kind of artwork that you like with a specific machine, if you're a good artist, then go draw them, and you can even sell them too, and other people will buy them and stick them on their machine. So we got magnetic decals. We have these weird-looking things on the side of the cabinet we call button boxes. And what's funny to me is not a single person who's come up to play the game yet has commented about the button boxes, which to me means they feel like they should. And in fact, these buttons are more ergonomic than traditional buttons because you don't have to bend your fingers 180 degrees around to get to the buttons from the palm of your hand. But the real reason we put those on there is so we can change up the interface to the machine. We can pull off these button boxes and we can put on gun handles or steering handles, motorcycle handles, or something. We can change it up. We could put joysticks on there. We could have a joystick coming out or a trackball coming out or any kind of button configuration. Anybody can develop a game for the system and change the interface to the game, which is unique, but it's necessary if you're changing up the platform. The other things we want to talk about are serviceability. So we can change up the way the game looks, we can change up the way the game plays, and then we'll get into the playfield swap in a minute. But before we do that, people who are putting machines in their house, they don't want to service them, or they want servicing to be very easy. And so I posted a question on the forums a few weeks ago, and I asked people, what are the most difficult things to service on a pinball machine? And one of the first ones people suggested was they hate rebuilding flippers. Right? You have to unscrew them, you have to pull them off, then you have to do your adjustments or replace parts. You put them back on, you have to align them just the right way. You got to get the bolt screwed down right, or else if you don't, it slips the first time you flip it. And if you over-tighten them, the bolt breaks in half, and it's just annoying. So Les is going to demonstrate how easy it is to swap flippers on our machine. And so just like any traditional game, we can just lift our playfield up and slide it and put it, we call it in service position, on the front panel. We have a front little door that we fold down, which gives us access to the things inside the machine. And then we can just literally pull the flippers out of the machine. So if a rubber broke, or if something happened, or if you just want to, maybe it got dirty, you just want to pull it off and clean it, you don't have to get your screwdrivers out. You don't have to, disassemble your machine. You just pull it off and clean it or replace it or whatever. We have, of course, a bunch of units. If you had this in your home, this machine in your home, and you don't want to ever do any repairs, you may have a backup set of flippers, or you may not. You may pull one out and fix it, or you might just pull one out, get ours, or you might pull one out, send it back to us, we'll send you a replacement unit, and you'll just stick it in there. Easy to replace. So that's the flippers. We'll set those aside for an instant, and let's talk about cleaning your playfield. So in a traditional game, does anybody here disassemble their machines to clean them? A bunch of people nodding their heads. Yeah, one in the back. Whenever I've cleaned my machines, my traditional machines at home, it's usually a couple-day process to disassemble the top side, make sure I put everything on the side right so I remember how to assemble it when we get back together. And then you clean it, you wipe it down with Novus 2, or you wax it and do your thing, and then you reassemble it. And that's really just to get all the grime that the ball tracks across the playfield off of the machine so it plays nice and clean and fast. So Les is going to do that entire process. He's going to disassemble the machine. Oh, wait, he's done. So our playfield is now out of the machine. That playfield is a piece of plastic that sits over top of the LCD monitor. And he's got a backup, a secondary piece of plastic that we could slide in there, and brand new, it'd be perfectly clear. And it literally takes, it took 2 seconds to pull it out and not much longer to put it back in. Before we put that back in, if you've seen the machine, you've seen our LCD monitor that we have in the front half of the playfield. The purpose of an LCD monitor in the front half is to give you all the display information you need right in front of your eyes when you're playing the machine. so that your score is in front of your eyes, the mode that needs to be played is right in front of your eyes. As things are happening, we can also dynamically change, of course, the artwork. We can have interactive modes where you shoot a shot and characters run around the screen or do whatever. But even more than that, the screen is, it's essentially a touchscreen LCD monitor. So when the ball's rolling around the playfield, the ball can physically interact with the virtual elements that are on the screen. The ball can roll over. We used to have a demo with asteroids floating around. The ball would roll over the asteroids and blow them up. Now we have a couple modes where we have bubbles coming out of a swamp that you can roll over and pop them and then pick up the gas. Or we have a mode where we have a bunch of crates with parts inside of them. You roll the ball over the crates, it blows them up. And then some of the crates have parts in them. You can roll over those and pick them up. The point is that we can do things that no one's ever done in the lower half of a playfield before. And we're doing it with technology that's equivalent to what your kids are playing these days. It's what we all have in our pockets. We all have a phone with a touchscreen, and we're playing games or we're texting each other, and that's just what we're used to these days. So we integrated that technology into the pinball machine, and we believe that people walking up to this machine can relate to it because it is what they're used to using at home. So this LCD monitor, just like the playfield surface, we're not going to pull it out, but just like the playfield surface and the flippers, it's on a rail system, and that LCD monitor literally just slides out of the machine. So maybe 5 years from now, we come out with a 4K ultra-high-def display. You slide this one out, slide the new one in, you're good to go. It's two cables, a power cable and a video cable, and you're done. So the other cool thing about the machine, of course, is that it's still physical pinball. And the back part of the playfield is literally a module that comes out of the game. So the module that's in there now, it's part of our Lexi Lightspeed game. It was designed by Dennis Nordman, and all the artwork was concepted based on some ideas he had, and that's our first game. So there's two parts to that. One is, how can we change it to be another game? Unless it's going to demonstrate that now. So if we want to go, we buy a new game from Multimorphic or somebody else, some third party's developing and selling games. We get the machine. It comes with a playfield. It comes with the side art. And if Les is going to change it, he is literally going to unlatch two clips on the front of the playfield. And I realize you can't all see this, but you'll see it when he pulls the playfield out. It'll be pretty obvious what just happened. There's, I believe, one cable in the back. He's going to lift the thing right out of the machine. Oh, there's two cables in the back, and he only unplugged one of them. I'll get the second one.
No, I unplugged the wrong one. Oops.
So the playfield's out of the machine. And there's two reasons to pull a playfield out of a machine. One is to put a new playfield in, which could be a whole different theme. Our second game that we're going to start developing right after we finish Lexi is Cosmic Kart Racing. It'll be a wholly different shot layout. It'll be very high-speed loops, fast-flowing ramps, a very high-speed game to contrast with this game, and that's it. But more important from a lot of your perspectives is serviceability. So to do something like, I don't know, replace a pop bumper on a traditional machine, you lift the playfield up, you hunch over the machine, you do your thing, you either unscrew it or unsolder it. But you're doing it in this very bad ergonomic position, and it's a pain, and you need to get your soldering iron and bring it over to the machine, find a service outlet, and it takes a while to do, and it's annoying. And now you can just grab your play field, take it to your workbench, and do the work where you're comfortable working. Your soldering iron should never have to leave your workbench. We want customers to never have to bring a soldering iron to the machine. If you need to replace a switch broke, traditional machine, you have to unsolder it. First you unscrew it from the playfield, then you, I don't know, is it unsolder or desolder? Desolder. Okay, so we're desoldering components. But the two wires that come from the switch are wired into a switch matrix. And so there's no way to take that cabling harness out of the machine. You have to desolder it. Well, all of our components have what we call pigtails, where you have two wires coming off of a switch, they go into a connector, and then that board that has those connectors feeds back to the main control system. So every single device on the machine, you can literally just unplug, unscrew from the playfield, and take it wherever you need to take it to desolder it at your workbench. Are there any things that I haven't talked about that you really hate about servicing on a pinball machine? Pardon me? Bulbs, replacing light bulbs. So same deal. Instead of, you know, hunching over the machine, trying to get to the light bulb, you just pull... One, you just pull out the play field and you can do it in the leisure of your couch or whatever. But, of course, we're using LEDs these days anyway, so theoretically we shouldn't have to be replacing light bulbs anymore. In fact, all of our flashers, all of our insert lamps, all of the lights we have on the machine are either coming from the LCD or coming from LEDs. Our flashers are ultra-bright LEDs, and our insert lamps are just regular RGB LEDs. Let me check the time. I don't know how much time I have. Okay, thank you. Halfway done. Question is, how well does the Lexan playfield surface hold up? And long-term, I don't know yet. We haven't had it out a while. What I do know is that games have been using plastic in their pinball machines for years and years. What Creature has a Creature from the Black Lagoon has a piece of plastic over that hologram is from years ago. Lexan's very durable. The problem with plastic is it is susceptible to scratching. So, yes, it's susceptible. There's two things I want to address related to that, though. One, we already showed you how easy it is to pull it out. We can clean it, we can polish it, we can do whatever. If it's scratched beyond repair, because we dropped something on it or for some reason... Yeah, we just go to the store, buy a piece of plastic. There's two notches in it right now. Either we'll cut them for you and ship them out, or you can cut them yourself. Very easy to replace. Try to do that on your existing machine. What happens if you scratch the wood? You hope Mirko's making a new playfield, and you order one for $1,000, and you replace all the components. It's a week-long process. The other thing about the plastic I was going to say, and then I forgot, is when the LCD is on... The colors, the brightness of that LCD shining through the playfield, you don't see scratches. This piece of plastic that is back in the machine now is our first piece of prototype plastic that it's been scratched all over the place when we slide it in and we had bad, you know, we were still working out the mechanicals. It's scratched all over, and no one sees it when they're playing because the brightness of the LCD shines right through it and you can't even tell. So the point is, yes, you can replace them easily, but you won't need to very often, if ever. Any other serviceability points you want me to address? What kind of solenoids are we using? We're using the same standard solenoids everybody else uses. We're making use of Williams-style flipper coils, and we're making use of mostly the 23800 coils that are very common in the industry. Same coils. Again, remember that we're pigtailing them to connectors that can go to boards, so we can just pull out the whole assembly. We don't need to take the soldering iron to the machine. We take the machine basically to the soldering iron. Serviceability, anybody else? Have we hit every single annoying serviceability item in a pinball machine? If not, tell me what I missed. Board repairs, good point. Traditional pinball machines have these big boards in the back box that have a lot of components on them that support a lot of features. When we designed our control system a long time ago, we designed it such that it's modular. So we have little tiny driver boards, 2.5 inch by 8 inch. We have the PROC board. We have switchboards. Les is showing it to you, and it looks pretty messy, so I wish he didn't do that. The reason it looks messy now is because we're experimenting. We're experimenting with this concept of pigtailing everything. If we weren't pigtailing everything on here, there would be 3 boards back there. Our first prototype had 3 boards, and that's when we did solder everything to the components, and you would have to take your soldering iron to the machine. This playfield has more PCBs. Those PCBs, we call them breakout boards. So there are connectors for every device, and then they chain back to the controller. But the thing about our control system, because it's small boards that are modular, you really don't ever have to do board repair. If you like doing board repair, you pull them out, you work on them, you stick them back in. If you don't, you take this little board out, it's $50, $60, $100 board. It's not a $300 or $400 board. You throw it away, or you send it to your repair guy. In the meantime, you get another board, you slap it in there. It's just a few connectors, and it takes literally, because you have easy access to the playfield and to the machine, it's a very quick process. So we talked about electronics, we talked about cleaning, we talked about servicing the modules, we talked about replacing decals, we talked about replacing the playfield insert, we talked about the shot layout. Anything else? No. All right, so what we were going to do next is, after Les reassembles the machine, which takes 2 minutes. We were going to project the game, and I was going to walk through the rules, and I'm still happy to do that, but unfortunately, since the projector's not working, or we don't have the right cables to connect to the projector, I'd like to invite y'all to come up, and we'll just kind of bunch around the machine, and we'll walk through it. Don't feel like you have to come up if you don't want to, but by all means, yes, there's one question. What is the price? We're still working through the details. We're currently projecting a price of $10,000 for 2 games. We're going to ship the machine with 2 separate games that we're developing individually. So it's a $5,000 per game price value. We're not quite ready for production yet. It's still probably going to be another 9 months or a year, but we're getting there. Question is, are we planning on doing any location testing? Yes, we're actually from Austin, Texas. We have a couple of big arcades down there. That'll let us, there are a couple of bars and clubs that are big into pinball that we have a lot of locations we can do that from locally. And then at some point we'll have enough machines we can start sending them out. All right, I guess I probably need to get in there so I can demo this, huh? Excuse me. We're gonna put the flippers back in and then we'll get it running. I apologize to those of you who don't want to come up or it's too crowded to see. We did have the camera rig. We had everything set up. I even emailed beforehand and said, can you support these cable? And of course, it didn't work out, but that's a good point. Of course, we're set up in the game room. We'll be there for the next 2 days. So by all means, come by. We'll show you the serviceability in person in the booth, or feel free to come by and play the game. People were playing it all yesterday, and we'll have it playable all day today and tomorrow. So let's see if it actually powers up. And it is running a PC, so it takes... Do I still need the mic? Yes, keep using the mic, because they're recording it. It is a PC, so it takes a few seconds to boot up. I am a ventriloquist now. And you can just use Novus, too. It's plastic. And any kind of plastic cleaner is fine. So it first boots up into what we call our launcher menu. If we had more than one game, there'd be games listed around here. Right now, we have our game, and we have a service menu kind of application. Let's just launch right into the game and hope it runs and doesn't crash in front of everybody. That would be embarrassing. And it actually didn't work right. We'll try that one more time. Actually, it wasn't a PC problem. It was a mechanical problem with the saucer, but hopefully it... When the game boots up, it's supposed to run through an unload sequence on the saucer, just in case you powered it off with ball still in there. And you'll notice we do have a little tiny LCD on the playfield itself, which we'll use at some point to... We're going to use that. We're going to integrate that. To me, it doesn't make sense to put physical devices, like targets and things, on a playfield that... are assigned to or have graphics related to them for specific modes that can't be changed. So pretty much everything that's theme-based on the machine can be changed. The LCD, of course, we can change the graphics and the modes and stuff that's going on. And the little LCD on the top, we're going to implement one of our main modes where we're battling aliens on the little LCD, and we'll have status on there for what's going on.
Earlier you mentioned how easy it was to change the decals, and I didn't hear that.
You didn't hear how easy it is to change the decals?
Yeah, you mentioned that it's really easy and so forth.
It's so easy that I bet some random person standing next to the machine could okay, maybe not.
Is it all?
They're basically car magnets. Yeah. They're the exact same material they use for car magnets. Yeah. So. The other thing I like about the machine, I really like the framed look. So most machines are solid sides. This is framed. So it just provides a slightly different aesthetic. Did we implement drop targets? Let me show you the targets that we do have and see what you think of those in a second. We'll start the game now. So we start the game. It presents a scene on the LCD, which is, we call this our static playfield. We call it static because the buildings and stuff on there that are defining the modes that we have aren't moving. They're not changing. Yes, we've overlaid inserts over them. And what's interesting about our inserts is we can change the colors of them. We can change the text around them. No other game with their insert lamps can you change what the text is that's defining of the shots. So we can change what the shots mean. Right now it's saying start mode on the right. It's saying alien attack on the left ramp. It says light lock on the 2 side targets. It's saying launch ball right in front of our eyes. A lot of people, when they're looking at the machine, there's a DMD up top that says launch the ball, but they never see it because they're trying to figure out what to do. But we have that message right in front of your face. The other really cool thing that I think, well, that I think is cool is below the flippers, we have what's, we call it an apron LCD. It's an LCD, it's part of the main LCD, but it's right in the place where your apron usually is, and you can't see through that. It's just a piece of wood below it anyway. But we've taken our LCD, we've partitioned a part of it off, and that's where we put the score information. So the score, the player number, your status through the game is literally right in front of your eyes, because when you're playing the game, you're staring mostly at the flippers anyway, and that's where your score is. So we launch a ball, and I'm just going to play with my hand right now and just show you what's going on. We have three modes developed right now. One's called Warehouse. When we hit this lower button on the right, it cycles through the available modes. We have Warehouse, Shooting Range, and Swamp. We had a question about drop targets, so let me show you the Warehouse mode. We shoot the right hole to start it. It zooms into the scene, and it pops up what we call a set of scoops and wall targets. And then it gives us instructions, on-screen instructions. It's going to tell us exactly what to do. It says shoot the crates. They'll reveal parts. It says there's a green door that goes to the next room, a red door that goes to the previous room, and then it starts. We can, of course, skip those instructions by hitting the flipper button at any time, so you don't have to wait for these long instructions to run. But now we have these six crates on the screen. We have the ball, and we have a door. That door is colored green. The scoop is green. And that indicates we can move to the next room. The objective of this mode is to break the boxes, which we'll do with the ball. So we run over the boxes with the ball. They blow up. The bottom box had a part in it. That's what we're trying to do. If you look in the LCD down here, most of you can see them. Those of you standing up close, we have little, you know, empty icons. And as soon as we pick up the part, it fills in one of the icons. There's four more to get, and eventually we'll get them all. We shoot the green door, it goes to the next room, it opens up a green door to the next room, and a red door to the previous room. We shoot the red door, it goes back to where we just were. So now we're going to go to the green door, again, we can progress through these rooms. I'm just going to let the ball drain, but because it's just four rooms that are all the same, basically. The boxes go into random positions, so the question is, what's behind the green door? Okay, so there's random positions of the crates. We shoot them. The cool thing about the virtual targets is in no other pinball machine will you ever intentionally try to shoot a target that might be right next to the opposite slingshot or something. These targets create infinite shot angles, we call them. So wherever the target is, you're going to shoot for it, and it might be at an angle that's unsafe or you wouldn't have to do in another game. So again, we collect parts. Now we have three parts. Now I'm going to let the ball drain. We lost the ball. I'm turning the volume down. The question was, how do we figure out where the ball is at all times? We have an infrared grid running over top of the screen. It's one of two reasons why all of our flippers and slingshots and side targets are floating above the surface of the screen. There's nothing, you can literally slide a towel under there to clean it down, or would slide your finger under there. There's nothing under there. Okay, so we're on ball two. We know we're on ball two because the apron LCD right in front of our face says so. We launched the ball. We could start another mode. Since we started Warehouse before, now we only have Shooting Range and Swamp available if we try to cycle through them, because we already tried the one. I'm going to show you Alien Attack next, which if we shoot the left ramp, it starts an alien attack. You saw the alien there. It bumped him up. He's eventually going to show up on the upper LCD screen, which is why he got bumped up. Then when we hit those targets, you want to hit a couple of those targets with your finger. Actually, the red ones. The ones that are right under the aliens. So it makes a little sound effect, and then the alien says, whatever. You hit him a few more times, and he's dead. So this game, it's kind of similar in nature to the cities in Attack from Mars or the castles in Medieval Madness, where we need to progress through with six or seven different aliens before we can complete that mode. I should address, at the very front on the apron LCD, there are icons for each mode. Just like there are typically insert lamps in a game that tell you how you're progressing towards the finale, we have icons here too. They're all blank right now, as random fingers push random switches on the playfield and things happen. But eventually these things will fill in as things happen, as we complete objectives in the game. So we started a mode, we started Alien Attack. Let's talk about multi-ball, because that's one of the coolest features on the machine, is that 8-ball physical ball lock that we have. Right now we have these side target banks that if we hit them once, we hit each side once. And notice those actually don't have switches in them. They're really just light blocks. Because we know where the ball is at all times, we know when it hits those switches. We know what direction the ball is coming from, so we know not to activate them when the ball's just rolling down the front or whatever. So now it says lock lid on the play field. See, it says lock ball one. Again, because we have the LCD, we can literally label the ball number of every lock shot that we need to hit. We lock it. The saucer grabs it. It shows an animation on the screen. And now that lock lit changed from yellow to blue. Now it's blue, and it says two-ball multi-ball. If we shot it again, it would start a two-ball multi-ball. Or we can get greedy, and we can say we want to lock more balls. So we light lock again. We try to light lock again. Now it says lock ball two, because there's already a ball in there. We shoot it again. We lock ball two. Gives us another ball. So now we can start a three-ball multi-ball. It says so on the screen. Or we can try to lock more balls. We're not going to lock eight balls because that would take all day. And
you have eight balls in the game?
Ask me that again in 5 minutes. We start a three-ball multi-ball. It kicks them out. It starts a ball save. By the way, one of the coolest features I think on the machine is what happens when we drain a ball while a ball save is on. Because we have the LCD right where the drain is, we can actually show animations of the ball coming right from where it drained and going back up the screen and being relaunched as if it were really saved by that alligator that just spit it back up. So we have projector. It's not very easy to see. Well, let's stay here until they figure out the colors. But okay, so we have multi-ball started. We shoot jackpot shots, and we get this huge display on the playfield itself giving you a jackpot award, showing you what's cool is happening. I'm going to let two balls drain. Multi-ball's over. We only got one jackpot because we're not very good. And we're back to the main mode now. Alien attack is lit. Start mode is lit. Light lock is lit again. Now you'll notice that it's harder to light locks. Now we have to hit both sides. The eight switches on the sides are now... Yes, gentlemen's trying to hit the switch, which isn't actually a switch because it knows where the ball is. There you go. So your finger was the ball, and yeah, it worked. Okay, so now it's just harder to light lock. So that risk-reward of how many balls should we lock before we start multi-ball, well, if we want it to be easy to light lock again, we want to do that a lot on the first multi-ball because it gets harder in the second multi-ball. And the third multi-ball, because there are eight switches, you have to hit each one individually, so it gets even harder to light lock again. Anyone know how much time I have?
10 minutes.
10 minutes, thank you. So we'll wrap this up pretty quick so we can ask some questions. I know we started a little late too, so hopefully we can run over a few minutes.
What do you do when do you have a high score to beat or something?
Do we have a high score to beat? We haven't implemented high scoring yet. The software itself is about 50% done. There's still a long way to go. We need a lot more implemented. We have more modes planned, more animations planned. We don't have any voice calls yet. We'll have a whole array of voice calls and more sound effects and everything else. Couple more. Let's just show you one more mode. Actually, two more modes. So we have these white LEDs at the top of the playfield that we call them spotlights or searchlights. And if we hit every one of those twice, where you can actually see the glass shatter on the screen as the spotlights are shot out. And now we got our searchlights knocked out. Actually, that icon lit down in the screen, so we're progressing towards wizard mode. And now we have a lights out mode lit. Lights out is only lit on the ball that you light it. So if you drain the ball now, you'll never be able to do lights out again during this game. You shoot lights out now, and it's a multi-ball mode. And there are those lights relit. The government facility, I guess, fixed the lights that you just knocked out, but the rest of the facility is out. And we have these spotlights running on the screen. If we shoot those spotlights again, do them one by one slowly, every time you hit one of these spotlights on the screen turns off. And when he does the last one, it's going to start a second stage of multi-ball, which plays it kicks out another ball, so now it's a four-ball multi-ball. If we'd already drained one ball, we would have had two. It would have kicked out two more. We have ball save still on. Now there's kind of like a siren light pattern running on the screen. The facility's, you know, alerted that you're trying to shoot out its lights and things. And now every single shot on the playfield is a jackpot. So the idea really is we'd probably want to shoot the pop-uppers or something and just have it give us, we got one hit on the pop-upper. Nice job. So every single shot, and you can see the jackpots just scrolling up the screen and you're racking up score and all that. Okay, so we'll drain now again. We drained three balls. We still have one in my hand, and that's it. So there's a couple more modes. I'll probably end it there, and we can start addressing some questions people have. I forget the question that I was supposed to ask again 5 minutes
ago.
Eight ball multi-ball. You all want to maybe go back to your seats, and I'll address you all together. We can get questions and stuff.
Ask, do you have two troughs in the machine then, when it holds a ball?
I'll address that with the number of balls question. Yes. So there's a question about how many balls the machine has, and there's a question about how the ball trough is configured to, you know, serve these balls, because all the balls are coming from the back of the machine. So right when they got the camera quasi-working, we stopped talking about the machine itself. Okay, so how many balls are in the machine? The way we have our trough, our ball trough configured, it's in the back of the machine. It's an 8-ball ball trough, but it's fed by a feed system that starts all the way at the front of the game, and balls drain and roll all the way back to that trough. So we have a single ball trough in the back, but we can literally stage balls all the way from that trough up to the front of the game. The game can hold 40 balls. Why would you ever want 40 balls in the pinball machine? I don't know, maybe just to break a world record or something. I don't know. But right now we have 9 balls in it just because the 8-ball ball lock can hold 8 and you'd still want another ball rolling around the playfield to start it. When I was testing this back at our office, I had 15 balls in there. When we took it down to, when we disassembled it to put it in the truck to bring it up here, I unloaded 15 balls. I kind of want to ship a game with at least 14 just to break that other record, that game that has 13 balls. And by the way, that other game that has 13 balls, the multi-ball is no fun because it just drops 8 balls right onto the flipper all at the same time. Our 8-ball ball lock, because of the way it rotates and drops balls out, it stages each ball as it's coming to the flipper. So you can actually play a real 8-ball multi-ball and have a chance of shooting 8 jackpots right off the bat, which probably should be worth some big award if you can hit 8 jackpots in a row when it gives you the balls. So unlimited number of balls. Not unlimited, but within reason. And the reason for that is because we don't know what games people are going to want to develop and how many balls their games will need to support. So if we have a ball trough that can support any number of balls, then it should be no big deal. The way the game tracks balls, it counts a ball as it goes onto the play field, and it decrements the counter as a ball goes off the play field. So it doesn't care how many balls are actually in the system. You can play the game with 3 balls, or you can play it with 20 balls. It'll still behave the same way. Questions? About anything, about the rules, about the machine, about our plans as a company, about some things we didn't address earlier. Question is, what are our plans in the next 3 to 5 years? How are we going to finance the company? There's a hat at the door as you walk out of the room. It should be probably a huge bucket, a 50-gallon container. We are a self-funded company. We have a couple of seed funders who helped us get off the ground, who helped us build our prototypes. Most of us are working for free and or in our spare time. I'm working full-time. We have employees, a couple employees that are also full-time, and a couple people that are helping us what we call spare time. So after their day jobs or on the weekends, they're helping us. We've come a long way. We've come from our concept. We have a playable machine now that looks like it could go to production at some point. It still takes, you know, it takes time and money to finish out development. The biggest challenge is taking, it's a fully re-engineered machine. This isn't a piece of plywood we stuck in a machine in an existing wooden cabinet. Everything's re-engineered. The ball troughs are re-engineered. Everything's re-engineered. So we have to make sure that these things are manufacturable and long-term reliable. And it takes some time and money to do that. We believe if we were fully funded today, which we're not asking to be funded with customer pre-order money, we refuse to fund the company with pre-order money. We won't do it. I don't want to put customer money at risk. So yes, we do have pre-order customers. We're using that money to incentivize or to de-risk investors. Mr. Investor, we have X number of pre-orders. We have X number of dollars already in the bank. Therefore, your risk in investing in our company is less because we already have some guaranteed revenue when we turn on production. We are looking to raise some money. We believe if we had money today, we'd be shipping games in 9 months. If we don't get that money today, of course, it'll take longer. The question is, what are the terms of the pre-order agreement? Right now, we're selling the pre-order for $99.95, almost $10,000. We're guaranteeing it comes with 2 games, Lexi Lightspeed and our second game, Cosmic Kart Racing. So it's $5,000 per game, which we believe is better than most other, you know, new games coming in box today. We have a payment schedule. We're in the middle of that payment schedule now, so if you were to pre-order right now, we'd ask you to catch up to that schedule. But again, your money is safe. It's in a bank account. If you want to cancel at any time, we'll give you all your money back. We, like I said, we're just using it to de-risk for investors. And of course, the more pre-orders we can get, I mean, if we could get 200 pre-orders, we would go to investors and say, listen, we're done. Or we, at that point, we might even go to the customers and say, listen, do you want us to turn on, to take your money and go fund the company and operations and all that? But yeah, it's a process. The payment schedule right now is set up to end in, I believe it's August or September of this year. But the final payment is not due until we're ready to ship your machine. So I think it's about 75% prepaid, and then the last 25% is when we're ready to ship. Questions? Question is, yes, it's dependent on getting investors, but when do we expect the game to be ready? And I believe if we got that money today, 9 months from now, we'd be shipping machines. Does that answer your question? Am I expecting that money today? We actually have brought in 4 or 5 potential investors to see the machine today. We've talked to a lot of people who are interested in helping, but you never know. Until you get a check, you never know. But what we're doing is we're offering company equity in response for that investment. So, I mean, we're a C Corp, we're offering shares of the company. We're hoping to build a company that evolutionizes, if not revolutionizes, pinball. We're applying new technology. We're trying to do things in a different way. Our manufacturing techniques are new and updated to its current standards. We're not building machines like they used to build them 30 years ago. We're not building our own factory. We're making use of contract labor and people that are used to being paid to assemble things and test things and ship things. So we're building the company in a different way. We're building it the way a company we believe should be built in this day and age. And we're doing it with technology that should be in the machines this day and age. So there's definitely interest, but you never know. You never know. And if we don't get the money today, no problem. We'll just keep, we'll keep doing what we do. We'll keep progressing, and we'll get there. Just don't know how long it'll take exactly. You had a question? How many players can play on it? So I started implementing. I wanted more than 4, just for the sake of having more than 4. And as soon as I put more than 4 players in the game, it started to take 3 columns up on the LCD, on the apron LCD, we call it. And I said, as soon as I have 3 columns, let me just fill up those 3 columns. So it's just a number in my code. I can say, what's the max number of players I should allow? And right now it's set to 9. 9. If anyone ever pushes the start button 9 times, then they better get ready to go take a nap before it's their turn to play again. It's probably an arbitrarily stupid number, just because you'll never be able to play that many, really, and have fun. But it doesn't matter. You didn't see the end of the game, but if you're playing a multiplayer game, after the game ends, all the player scores are tallied in a table, and it identifies who's the first player, who's the last. It ranks all the players according to their score. So as soon as the game's over, you can quickly see who won. You don't have to try to, you know, compare numbers against each other and figure out who had the highest score. It tells you. Just a little feature, because it's easy to do. I assume I'm just about out of time. Let's ask for another question or two, and then call it. Do we have the ability to connect 2 machines together or more than 2 machines together to play head-to-head or in group kind of gaming configurations? We have plans to do that, yes. Our second game is Cosmic Kart Racing, which by definition, kart racing games are typically, I guess not by definition, but they're typically, you know, networked together and you're racing against other people, whether they're in the same house or in different parts of the country or world. Our game is network connected. We intend to do, you know, online statistics tracking, online service schedules, and updating a database with you know, your statistics as players, your statistics as the game. And of course, we've talked about plans to network that game specifically together. So Cosmic Kart Racing, you'll be able to log into the game, you'll install it, you'll turn it on, you'll run the application, you'll log in as your driver ID, and then you'll have the option to connect to other machines around the country, around the world, or just in your house if you have more than one machine. It'd be really neat for me to see 4 of these machines lined up, each highlighted in a different color with the LEDs, and you're assigned a different color, and that color is your kart as you're racing, and you're literally racing against each other. We'll get into the rules in CCR another day, but yes, we absolutely have plans to network games together, both in a competitive and in a cooperative mode. It'll be neat someday to have games where you can progress through certain shots, and maybe you have someone else connected to you playing on a different machine, and they have to do certain shots, and you kind of work together to progress through a sequence of rules. Yes, last question. The question is, are we considering some kind of way of letting people physically talk to each other using microphones and voiceover or whatever? I don't know the answer to that, maybe. I think we need another question. Question is, can we, because the artwork is easily removable, can we protect it on a location-based environment from people just grabbing it and walking away with it? It's a great question. A lot of people ask it. Yes, we will have a trim package that we make available with the machine. If you install the trim package, it will cover the edges of all the decals, all the way around the decal, and you won't have access to the edges. You won't be able to peel it off. So yes, we do have that protection. So thank you all for coming. I apologize again for the technical details. Thanks for sharing this close quarter experience with me. And again, we're in the showroom. Please come by. And I'm always happy to talk about PROC, to talk about P3, to talk about the company, to talk about pinball in general. So thank you very much.